Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right. This is a workshop on master planning and building your master plan. Some call it a launch plan. Some call it a business plan. Some call it a church planning prospectus. Whatever you want to call it, it's extremely important. 20 years ago, you didn't see it so much. Now, it's almost required. Most denominations require a master plan. Most denominations require some kind of business plan. And not just an outline of a page or two, but a very detailed master plan. So that's what we're going to do. I want to talk about a few things about the master plan. Then I want to actually show you one. I've got a whole bunch. I've got a whole stack up here. You can come look at them afterwards. I'll highlight a couple of them. But I'm going to focus in on one that I actually helped create just in terms of guiding this person through it. But then he has it. And then I want to make that available to you, too, in the digital form. So at the end, I'm going to give you my email, and then you can send it to me. It's a very large file because there's a lot of beautiful graphics on it, but Google Drive takes care of that, so I can just send it to Google Drive to you, and you'll be fine. So just a few things when we talk about a master plan. How many of you have ever done a master plan? Raise your hand if you've done a master plan. Okay, one. And the rest of you are like, that's why we're here, obviously, right? You haven't done one. So when you're doing a master plan, there's a number of things that it covers. It's going to cover the vision of the church. And you're going to be looking at what the vision is, and you're going to be trying to delineate the vision very clearly, make it very clear, very concise. And you want it to be very compelling as well. So you're putting forth this vision and casting this vision. And usually I like to think of a vision as there's a problem and you're helping provide the solution. That's a marketing thing as well. But we're going into this community and here's what the situation is in this community. And it may be, you know, only 9% that are churched. And so we're targeting unchurched people. And this is how we're going to do it. And this is what they value. So this is our strategy. This is how we're going to go about that. Along with the vision, you're also trying to create an urgency. That, you know, there's a timeline. Every good master plan has a timeline. And that's where I look at it. I do coaching. I do it within our denomination. I do it outside of our denomination. I do Skype coaching with guys all over the country. And in doing that, the first thing we do, I try and get with them. Most, I'd say 90% of them hire me before they launch the church, before they've gotten into preview services. And so the first thing I do, I say, okay, tell me your goals. Tell me what you're hoping to do. Tell me a little bit about the area. Tell me your vision. And then the first thing I do is I say, okay, we're going to start with a timeline. And the timeline, the way we look at it, is we look at it with the end in mind. You know Stephen Covey and his seven habits of highly effective people. He talks about starting with the end in the mind, starting with the future and working backwards. What's it going to look like? What's it going to feel like? And so we go way out and we say, okay, when do you want to launch? What is your launch date? And that becomes the goal, and then everything else works backwards from that. So we start with the timeline and work backwards, and then we take the present up to the future. A good master plan will have the purpose and values of the church. A good master plan is going to have the strategy. A good master plan is going to have a budget. And I already mentioned the timeline. And a good master plan is going to make an ask. Somewhere in the master plan, usually at the end, you're going to be making the big ask. You're going to say, here's how you can participate. Here's what's needed. We're praying for you know, 10 people who will give $100 a month, 20 people who will give $200 a month. So they can kind of find their spot in there where they can help you. It's going to have a projected budget in it. And I like to see, and speaking as one who is a denominational leader, I like to see a phasing out. So I like to see not just the budget for the first, second, or third year. And I don't go beyond 3 years. We guys like me, we don't like to see support beyond 3 years. So go out to 3 years, but then put, you know, amount coming in from the church going like this from left to right, and then amount coming in from, you know, other sources, and then, you know, the church income increases, the other sources decrease, so that it kind of passes, and so then finally, after 2 or 3 years, the main amount is coming in from the church, and eventually the outside sources, including denominational support, is going off. And then kind of maybe a now what? Now what do we do? Kind of an application. Not only give, but pray, plant seeds, remember, you know, kind of a final, remember this is an opportunity, but we also know that God's the one who ultimately plants the church. Jesus is the one who said, I will build my church. Paulus, you know, watered, but we ultimately give glory to God. That's why we're doing this. It's all about glorifying God. That's why we're starting churches. So what I want to show you now, Jan's running our PowerPoint for us. And so this is one that they're just starting. So I picked this one because it's fresh. I picked this one because I've coached this guy. I actually asked him to be here. He couldn't be here. He'll be here next year, but he has his first preview on October 20th. So you can see why he's not here. He's up to his neck in alligators right now. And he's just doing a great job. And I shared this with some of you who are at one of my other workshops. Every year we've been having now Nuts and Bolts, which runs the Nuts and Bolts workshop, which this workshop is a part of. Ron Sylvia, myself, a couple other guys that speak for Nuts and Bolts conference. We do a conference in Florida. We just did one in August. I'm hoping we'll do another one next year, Jan. I'm pretty sure we will. And the really neat thing is we've got different sponsors now, and mainly it's the church at the Springs, but they put up $20,000. And there's a contest. And you would bring a plan like this. You would make your plan, and you bring it to the conference. And before, we get all these plans, and then we select the top eight. And we say, okay, out of all the plans, these are the top eight. Then we interview those guys. And it's just 2 or 3 minute interviews. It's just kind of, you give your pitch. We've already seen the master plan. Then we take it to the final four. And that's when it really gets exciting. So we got the final four. We've got about 7 or 8 guys that are judging, mainly speakers. We even brought in some other guys from different denominations. We had Planting Healthy Churches represented. We had some other guys. And it's a Shark Tank. You ever seen the show Shark Tank? And those guys are like, you know, why should we invest in you? That's how you should look up making this up. Like, you're going to go into a Shark Tank and they're going to ask you questions. Why should somebody invest with you? Do you have it covered? And do you see how those shark guys, they expose weaknesses. And when there's blood in the water, they just go for it. And those guys come out of there and they're like, well, why would you do that? And they're like, I don't know, you know. And so we kind of, it was all in fun, but we would kind of do that. We could ask them any question we want. Are you personally in debt? What does your wife feel about this? You know, you only have this slotted to this. This seems unrealistic. Do you really think you're going to raise up? You know, that kind of thing. So we went through that, narrowed it down to the final four, and then chose a winner. And it came down to two guys, a guy named Chris McGregor, who's in Montreal, and Drew Sodstrom, who's in El Dorado Hills up in Sacramento. And Chris won, and Drew came in second. And so the one we're looking at is actually Drew's, and it's called Vintage Grace. So Jan, if you'll bring that up. There you see it. And the thing I want you to, well, you tell me, what's your first impression? What do you notice about that from a good standpoint? What's something you notice about that's good?
Visual grabs you in, right away.
Visual grabs you in. That's what you want. What else do you notice?
Very well done.
It's very well done. It's done with excellence. What else?
It's plain and simple.
It's plain and simple. Yeah, it's plain and simple. Good use of colors. Yep.
The outline so you know exactly where you want to go if you don't read it.
Yeah, notice it's like a magazine or almost like a Reader's Digest version. It says the whys, why we're planting churches. You turn to page 5. How you can get involved. You know, how many like to just skip through a book and get to the end, right? Let me just cut to the chase. If you want to do that, that's an option, page 15. So it's beautiful. The tree, if you lived in El Dorado Hills, you would know that. That's what the landscape. It's rolling hills, and you see these beautiful trees. They took the wheat, and they put the color in the grass in the photo. But it's very nice. Nice logo. The name, Vintage Grace, what is that? One of the questions we asked him in the Shark Tank was why that combination of those two names. That's different. We've never heard Vintage Grace. We've heard of a lot of vintage churches, Grace this and that. But putting those two together, what's the value, what's the uniqueness of that? And he explained that, and that's actually in this. Okay? Notice it says, coming to El Dorado Hills. So that's the location. There's a partnership plan, so you know that you're a prospective partner, you're reading this. There's a quote down at the bottom. I'll read that quote because you really can't see it on the screen. It says, I'm very excited for the launch of Vintage Grace. Drew Sodstrom is a great leader, pastor, and follower of Jesus. He and his church will be an incredible blessing to the El Dorado Hills community. Looking forward to working with him and so glad he is in the neighborhood. Signed, Drew's mom. No, it wasn't Drew's mom. It was Doug Roosh. And Doug Roosh, here's the amazing thing. Doug Roosh is a pastor at another church in El Dorado Hills. How cool is that? That's not like some guy that Drew's known for 15 years. That's a guy he met when he got on the field, befriended. And here is an affirmation and a recommendation from another pastor in the area. Pretty, pretty cool if you ask me. Okay, now what we're going to see is a personal page. Drew started with the vision. And a lot of people will tell you when you do a master plan, you start with the vision. And it's, to me, it's kind of cold calling. You're just going for the vision. I say start with a personal letter from you. Now, why do you think that's effective? Those who are in my workshop I did on financing and raising money, who do people give to ultimately? They give to relationship. They give to a person. I give to Billy Graham, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, because I think I'm given to Billy. And in a way, I am. And so they're giving to you ultimately. They don't know the other people in your church, right? You just have a small core group or a small launch team or whatever. So they're giving to you. So I said, Drew, write a personal letter. Tell them a little bit. Let them in to know a little bit about yourself. Kind of share where you're at and kind of go from there. So he wrote this little personal letter. And it's interesting. I don't think you can read it there. But what it says basically is when the first time we approached him, the FCA West, to talk about church planning, that was 2 years ago, we shared a very compelling argument for church planning. And the guy, one of the guys who's on staff with me, helps oversee the churches we oversee, he was in his church. It's a church here in Orange County, Yorba Linda. And he'd been a youth minister. How many of you have been a youth minister before? Okay, look at that. Youth ministers make really good church planners most of the time. And he'd been a youth minister for 7 years in this one church, and then he became an associate pastor for 4 more years. And so they kind of watched him, and they were grooming him to maybe take over if the senior pastor was in his mid to late 50s. But my friend said, I just think, he knows me, and he said, I think Drew would make a great church planner. Would you like to meet with him? I said, well, only if he wants to meet. You know, does he feel that? Oh, he doesn't see it yet, but let's meet. So we meet and we go through and we share about the effectiveness of new church plants. And we go and I share this vision. And at the end, we share, Drew, what about you? Would you ever consider that? And he said, I have to be honest, I'd say it's about a 2% chance I'll ever plant a church. 2%. And he said, my wife, I think's a negative 20%. So yeah, guys, I really appreciate it, but I don't think. And one thing I've learned, you've got to have a calling to plant a church. You don't ever want to plant a church without a calling. God's calling you. It's on your heart. You got to do it, or you feel like you're disobeying God. And obviously he wasn't there. But you know what happened over the next few months? I'd say the next 6 months. That thing, he started praying about it. It started growing on him, growing on him, growing on him. He calls me up one day. He says, Dave, I have to plant a church. God's called me to plant a church. I've got to plant a church. And I feel he's calling me to the area. And it's in El Dorado Hills. And I've got a friend who lives up there. And I've already contacted another guy who's interested in coming on. And he's going to raise support. And it just started snowballing. And so he went up there. So that's his personal letter. Again, if you email me, I'll send you that. You can have it. So I asked him, although he couldn't be here because he's getting ready for his first preview, he did make a video. And it's like a 3-4 minute video. And I asked him to kind of walk through for you. I said, walk through for our guys in the workshop and tell them your strategy of how you created this particular document. After this, you're going to see the document as well. So go ahead and run that, Jen. This is Drew Sodstrom, El Dorado Hills.
Hi guys, it's Drew Sodstrom from Vintage Grace, and I just want to say thank you for letting me come and just share with you and really try to encourage you to pour into, take the time as you guys start this process to write a good perspective, to write a good business plan and a model that you guys can go back to years later. We're about a year into this planning process, and it was about a year ago that we decided to sit down and write this Vintage Grace prospectus, which we use all the time now. We've seen God use it in all sorts of different ways, and it started with really just me sitting down and fleshing out my vision for what Vintage Grace was going to be all about. It was God's vision in my life and how God wanted to see that played out, and we got to answer all the core questions, who we are, what we want to be about, what our mission, our vision is, and it's been a great tool that I've used not just a year ago, but I use it all the time now. I use it for when I was gathering my launch team. And we had our third launch team gathering today as we start to get ready for our first preview service coming up in a couple of months. And as we met together, I pointed my launch team back to this. We've got about 35 adults and 25 kids, and almost all of them have seen this document because they've got to see, you know, who we are and what do we value more than anything else. And I think that this document ends up being like a family budget. As you go through your life, you look at your budget and you say, wow, as much as I want that, or maybe we want that, we go back to the budget and see if it fits. And this becomes our church's really guiding principle as God has written this for us, that we get to kind of walk this line together, not just look at who we are and what we're about, but also who we're looking to target and to pour into. So my launch team now, they understand who our target family is because we took the time to really say, who do we feel like God's calling us to minister to here in El Dorado Hills? And define that for our people so then they understand who we think we're naturally going to be drawn towards and naturally drawn towards and our vision. And then I think beyond that, we also want to think through how are we going to go past the core launch team and past the initial people that are going to be drawn to it, but also what's our strategy for the preview services? What's our strategy? What's our timeline going to look like? What are our service events going to be? And as you think through that, I encourage you, write it down. Put it in a timeline. Put it on paper so then you can look back and you can see kind of how God's working and what he has done and what plans he's changed. And one of our commitments, even as we penned this document, is, and we've gone back and adapted it at times and edited it, is we don't just say, God, here's our plan, but our plans are open-handed. We write them in pencil. But God, you write in pen. So show us what you want to do as you guide and lead us. And that's been one of the greatest joys also as we look at our timeline. Let's look back and say, wow, God did this. And God did this. And it started a year ago, but he continues to check things off the list. And to see people come to know him and to enjoy him together, which is our mission as a church. And one of the key pieces I feel like in the prospectus isn't just the how do you gather, the key milestones, but also defining what success looks like. So you can know going into it, Lord, this is what we're hoping to be about and what we're hoping to accomplish. And then beyond that, really, what's it going to cost? To count the cost to your family, but also just the financial cost. What's it going to cost to make this happen, to make this church plant be more than just an idea, more than just a dream, but actually something that's going to happen? And for all of our donors and all of our supporters, we've given this to our partners. And we've said, hey, partners, would you look at this and pray about partnering with us? We tried to write this in such a way where we're trying to answer all the questions that if we were going on Shark Tank on ABC, what are those guys going to ask? We tried to answer those questions for them and then also give them a clear, direct challenge and a call to say, hey, you can invest in this. God's doing something in North El Dorado Hills, and would you be a part of it? And this is a document that we've used for our current team, for our future team, for our future supporters and our partners. We've also used it for pastors in our community. As we came into this community, we came alongside lots of good churches that were surrounding us in neighboring cities and even some in our current city. And we had to say, hey, God's doing something already in this city. This is what we want to be about, and we want to partner with you in being a gospel Center Planting Church. We got to show them again who we were and not just be flippant and just come in and say, hey, we're going to do this thing. We got to say, hey, we've thought about this. We've counted the cost to everything from the details to the vision to the values. And I think it's communicated in excellence. It's communicated a plan. So as you go into this, as you go into this planting journey, I want to encourage you to do that, to sit down, to take the couple of days, to clear your schedule and to clear your mind and say, God, what is it that you're doing in my life that I can be a part of what you're doing in the city that you're calling us to? And I will tell you, as a planter that hasn't launched, we haven't had our first preview, that this document has been a great blessing to me and I think even to my family, because we can look back and we can see God's fingerprints all over it. And we can take great comfort and courage in knowing that God's doing something in us and through us. And then for us, it's just a blast to be a part of. So blessings to you. Good luck. This is exciting. And I'm excited for you. Have a great day.
All right, great. Just from that 3 to 4 minute video, what was something maybe you heard that you can apply to your master plan that you're going to make? What was something that stuck out to you? Yeah.
Success.
Defining success. Yeah, that's unique. I didn't share that earlier. I have it ready in here because he does that. He has a section. Very unique. Most master plans I see, they don't define success. What does success look like? How will we know if we're successful? What are the metrics you're using? Is it just numbers, X number for previews and this? Or is there more? And I would say there's a lot more that you want to put, and you're going to see in just a moment how he defines success. Something else you saw that could apply, yeah.
Well, what I found interesting is how much he's referred to it already, and he hasn't even started yet.
He hasn't even started the church yet, and it becomes the working document going back to it, just like a business for a master plan. Whether you know it or not, if you're starting a church, you're moving into entrepreneurial grounds at this point. And so you're starting a new business. You have a business plan. You work the plan. You tweak it as you go. Notice he said it's written in pencil. We can tweak it, but he's got a good outline there. Anybody else? What did you notice that you can apply? Yeah.
They're targeting specific kinds of families.
They're targeting. They have a specific target. You're going to see who that is in just a moment. They know who they can reach best based on who they are. If you came to our Nuts and Bolts workshop, you found that the people you reach best are people just like you. It's called the law of magnetism. In church growth circles, it's called the homogeneous principle. You're going to reach people who are like you. You don't stop there. That's just the beginning. You don't fight it. It's just a natural law. So you reach people that you are, but you're not satisfied there. You're going to go outside of that and reach all diverse people within your community. But that's how it starts. Yeah.
I think the Shark Tank principle is really important, that he needs to be able to answer questions that people are going to be asking.
Yes. Yes. If you ever have a vision night with this document, or you get in a group, or you get called in with 12 elders who are there from a church that's considering sponsoring you, and they've got this document, and they're going to be asking you those questions, exactly what you're talking about. And he said that because he actually was in a Shark Tank. That's what was so cool. But that whole analogy, if you plan your master plan like you're going to be in a Shark Tank, what a great analogy, what a great way to do it. Anybody else? Yeah, last one.
I think for me, it wasn't necessarily what he said.
Uh-huh.
But what you could see is, when you have it written out, you have a plan, it gives you an air of confidence.
Yeah.
As well as you communicate your vision, because you have thought the process through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like if you're speaking, right? If you really got it well mapped out, you know what you're going to say. You've put time and energy into it. It builds confidence in you. And I think this kind of thing, when you've got a really realistic budget, timeline, know when you're starting, know that you have these previews, you've researched it out, you've really planned, it gives you a bounce in your step. It gives you some confidence, like, let's go, we're ready. Game on, let's do it. And Drew's kind of like that anyway. He just kind of exudes confidence, you know. He's just kind of like that. But this helps him. This really helps him a lot. Jan, we're going to go back into the PowerPoint. I want to show him after the letter, the next one. And the next one after the letter is kind of a map of the state of California and where he put Vintage Grace in there. So there it is. I have one guy. Now see that? That's where Vintage Grace is. It's in Sacramento. El Dorado Hills is a little bit above Sacramento, kind of in the hills there. And I have one guy named Brett Martin. Brett was here at the conference. And Brett is starting in Camarillo, California, about 2 hours from here. And he just got a tattoo of the state of California just like that. And he has a star where Camarillo is. So, I mean, he's like going for it. He's like branding himself with his new church plant, Brett Martin. So that's California. But notice what this is. This is what is Vintage Grace. So you're new. You're a prospective partner in this process. So he's going to define here vintage, an adjective of high quality, especially from past period when something was originally produced or existing or existed. So he's going back to the vintage of the Bible, of the beginning of the Christian faith, of the first century. At the same time, grace, a verb, unmerited favor, any and everything we receive because all we truly deserve is death. So he's taking the idea of something old, but then something new with the vintage classic, and at the same time mixing that with the grace of God and saying that's what we're about. We're a vintage grace church. And notice the roadmap. A church planting proposal, a master plan, is like a roadmap. It should be taking you somewhere. He illustrated on the outside of the magazine type style that he used. Now on the inside, he has the roadmap. Why plant a church? The plan, the vision, the whys, who we are, who we are reaching, our target, and somebody mentioned that. What is Vintage Grace value? Notice R1, R2, R3, you'll see what those are. How we will gather, our milestones, what does success look like, the cost, and get involved. If you just use an outline similar to that, that's why templates are great. Yours is going to be totally different because you're in a different area, you're a different person, different church name, different values. But a template like that, you're pretty much covering the bases. Okay, Jan, the next one, the plant. Why plant? And he goes into, there's clearly a need in the Church of America. He quotes some real, anybody follows church planting, anybody who follows outreach, anybody who follows church growth, he's quoting some biggies here. He starts with Tim Keller, and he basically paraphrases Peter Wagner's old quote about, you know, the most effective evangelistic methodology under heaven is planting churches. Tim Keller says a similar thing, and that's what he leads off with. Then he goes into a Charles Arne quote, and then he goes into, now he differentiates himself, and he says there's clearly a need for the church in America to grow in quantity and quality, and this need is everywhere. Beyond the basic need for more churches, I also have a passion for seeing more joy-filled churches made up of joy-filled individuals. So one of his things, he's been influenced by Piper. It's just like, you know, Christians should be the most joy-filled people on earth. We've been saved. We've been set free. We have a place to go. We have purpose for living. And so they're calling the beginning of their church these joy-filled communities. And small groups is going to be a part. And they're joy-filled small groups. And then they want to start other joy-filled communities, which would be other plants up all around Sacramento. So they go on and explain that. You can see this when you actually get the document yourself. Then he goes into the plan. The good news are the good news, people want to be happy, and it's completely attainable through Christ. The supply is limitless and the demand is high. Then he goes on into the plan. From there, go to the next one, Jan. He has a ladder. And now he goes on in explaining the vision of the church. And he explains a little bit where that came from. And see, we're all shaped. We're all the products of people who have influenced us. So he was at a really healthy church in Orange County called Richfield Community Church. And he served on this church staff for 7 years as a youth minister and 11 years altogether. And he tells about that. And he went through a process of transformation. So he says our DNA is going to be this transformation. And Drew's very into spiritual formation. He even was an adjunct professor at Biola in that regard on the side. So he kind of tells about that. And at the end, he even says, a hill I'm going to die on. He says it's not about how many we reach. Obviously, we want to reach as many as possible. But it's about transformed lives. Because if you're just reaching people, it's just a bunch of numbers, and they're not having lives changed and being transformed in the image of Christ, then what's the point? So at the end, he comes all the way back and kind of re-emphasizes that statement. The next one, Jan, is the whys. Why plant in Sacramento? Well, Sacramento is the capital of the most populated state in the country. It's the chief seat of ours. Why El Dorado Hills? El Dorado Hills is 22 miles east of the city, up the hill. Why there? Why us in El Dorado Hills? So he answers the question we always ask for church planters: do you fit the area? Do you fit the community? And so he's kind of doing that. And then he goes in the next one, Jan, who are we? Now this is fascinating to me. Notice what he does here with these three numbers here. And there's nobody's ever done this. He came up with this on his own. It's like Rick Warren, 40 days. Why did you do 40 days? Rick never said, he didn't plan that. One of his staff people actually told me one time, they're like, how are we going to do this? It's going to be a campaign. And one of the guys goes, why don't we do 40 days? And Rick's like, great, that's a great number, because you see it a lot in the Bible, you know, 40 days of purpose, you know, kind of thing. Well, here's what Drew came up with. Drew came up with a 3-12-30 plan. 3-12-30. And what he did is he took it back to Jesus' three, his closest friends. He had 12 disciples, but he had three, Peter, James, and John, who were just his buddies he just hung out with. So Drew said, we're going to get three. So it's not just going to be me starting the church. We're going to start with a team. And I'm going to get two other people, be they staff, paid staff, volunteer. Theirs are actually going to be paid. They're raising money. So he's starting with another full-time pastor, family pastor, and he's starting with a part-time youth minister. Both of them are raising their own support. Both of them from their churches they're at are sending them out with their blessing and helping pay part of their salary. And then they're raising support just like Drew. I told church in the church planning workshop, if you do get somebody else, don't you give money to them so much. You let them raise their salary just like you're raising your salary. Quite frankly, you can't raise two salaries most likely, so they need to do that anyway. It's a whole new group of people. So we see number one, primary leader of the church is Jesus. So the one is Jesus. But then he breaks it into the 3, 12, 30. So the three are his friends. Those are the three staff members. The 12 are the key leader couples. You know, Jesus with the 12 disciples, but these are going to be the key leaders. And he already has six key leadership couples. His goal is to get 12. Now, he wrote this about a month or two ago when he finished this. Now he's 2 weeks away from, or a week away from a preview, a week and a half away. So he has this, so he's going into it. I think he has the 12 now, or 10. But his goal is 12 key leadership couples, and ultimately he's training them, he's discipling them, and these are going to be ones who are going to lead small groups. So these will be mentors, small group leaders, that kind of thing. And he's doing it as couples. So he has 12, and then he has 30. What's the 30? The 30 members are the ones who are going to make up their first couple of life groups. They're going to serve in various ministries, children's ministries, greeters, men's ministry, worship ministry. So these are all going to be servants. But essentially what that 30 is, it's his launch team. He's going to add to that, but that's his launch team. At the writing of this, again, he was 2 months out. He already had 24 in that. Now, because he had some pre-events, even pre-preview, kind of pre-gathering events, I call them, now he's up to about 45, 50 in his launch team. So that 30 now is close to 50. It's between 45 and 50. I don't know exactly what the 12 is, but I'm guessing it's somewhere between 10 and 12. And the three guys are on board. One guy's already moved there. He's helping him, the full-time guy. The part-time youth guy is coming in January when they launch the church. So, and I think he'll be at the couple previews before that. Okay, next one. Now he gets a little more personal. Now you can see. And see, these aren't just like pictures taken right outside, wherever. I mean, they were outside, actually. But they're good quality. And if you saw it on the actual digital, they're beautiful quality photos. And those are his three guys. So he's showing you the three guys that he mentioned. Okay, the next one. Now he's showing a target family. And this is actually a family they met there. Drew would make trips up there for 2 or 3 months before he actually planted there. And he'd meet people, even met the mayor of El Dorado Hills. And he would just meet people. I knew some people because of other pastors, because I pastored in 10 years in an area not too far from there. And he met people, and here's the Calma family. And this is a target. So a lot of times they'll show drawings. This is an actual family they're targeting that they talk to who are part of the core team in the church. And so they break it down into age, kind of where they're at in life. They got two, maybe they're having a third kid. They've got young kids. And that's exactly where Drew's at and where his wife is at as well. And then he breaks it down into the primary concerns. Go right back. Right here, do you see here? This is kind of exegeting his community. You don't want to just exegete the word. You want to exegete the community. He says they're lonely. They feel disconnected. They're living, what's that say? Living in debt. They love the stuff, but they're living in debt. Third, they're worshiping their kids. So you know, we love our kids, but we don't want to worship our kids. And third is church baggage. They're interested in Jesus and spirituality, but they've yet to meet a Christian that is happier than they are. Interesting. He even did a survey with one guy, and he says this. He says, recently I met a business owner in El Dorado Hills area, and I asked him one question. As people go to bed at night around here in El Dorado Hills, what is one thing that keeps them awake? He said the guy thought about it for a minute, and he paused, and then he said, happiness. Happiness. People around here want to be happy, and they'll do anything and everything to pursue that. And after another pause, he said, but they are really lonely and crave community and a place to belong. So he took that in. One of the things Rick Warren taught me when we started our first church, he said, Dave, find out what the buzzword is in your community. The buzzword. How do you know? You got to ask around. You got to, you know, kind of look under the bushes. You got to talk to people. You ask them. And when he started Saddleback Community Church, the buzzword for Orange County was success. And so Rick did series on success. And he did a bunch of what is success from the biblical standpoint. And so Drew has done the same thing. What is the buzzword? What do they value? And this guy is telling him happiness. He's a major business owner in El Dorado Hills. Happiness. So Drew turns right around, and I'm not going to make you show it now, Jan, because you'd have to go into another page, but we'll show it later. Drew's first mail out, the direct mail that comes out in about a week, it's the pursuit of happiness, how to have real joy. So that's what he's leading off with right at the beginning. It's just a great, great strategy. He's hitting the felt need there. This family is between, he says, between 30 to 38 years old, married, and that he's just giving that. Now, what does he value? You'll see here, we value, or we want to encourage people to enjoy God together in mission. We're passionate about the vision, and he talks about his belief. Then he has three R's. R stands for relationship. Relationship with God first, relationships second with relationship with others, believers, and they have a vision there, and then relationship with those who they call yet to believe. That's positive thinking, isn't it? Yet to believe. They share their values, they share their vision, and then the next one, Jen, how will we gather people? How will we gather people? And he talks about the 30 and the launch team going out and reaching people where they live. He talks about kind of some of the goals they're trying to do. And then he gets to the milestones. On the milestones, here's where he breaks it down. Phase one. So he breaks it in phases. A plan phase. Plan phase is he did some monthly pre-trips. I shared that leading up to it. He wanted to get his 501c3 established, so he started working on that. He started his partnership raising. He established the core, which is the 3-12-30. And then he started working with, looking at potential leaders for his church. Phase two was to prepare. They did, because Drew played soccer, they did soccer clinics. So they went in the community, they got some other good soccer players, and they put on vintage sports clinics. So they did like soccer clinics in their community, free for kids, you know, food, coaches, the whole nine yards. They did a retreat with their leadership. They started training that part of the 12, those couples, in small group leadership. Phase three was practice. Now they're starting some groups. Their practice will include their preview services. Those are the practice. The unique thing they did on their mail out, I got digital, but I don't have it to show you, but I'll send you that too if you want that. They put one side as make a difference. So they're doing donate food, donate clothing, donate this and that. And they're doing that at the park. They're going to have the bouncy house. They're going to have sponsors who are bringing food. So they're saying, we can make a difference in the community. So they're involving kind of a compassion servant evangelism, and as well as inviting them to their service and the felt need pursuit of happiness. So those are on two separate sides of the mail out. So that was part of the practice. They're also, because his wife was involved in MOPS, MOPS is a tremendous outreach, Mothers of Preschoolers. So they're starting a MOPS right away. So they put the MOPS logo on the mail out as well. They're going to very early on do the Financial Peace University, help people get out of debt. And then he has a list of the previews, and one of his preview services is Christmas Eve. Here's something, I don't know if you can see it here, but he even puts the amount of people. He said at the first preview, which is coming up, he hopes to have 100 people. At the second preview, they hope to have 150 people. They're doing their third preview on Christmas Eve, which is a great time for a preview. Not usually your first, but your second or third. They hope to have 200 people. And then for the launch, their launch goal is 250 people. And that's what they hope to have. Now the next one, here's the one I think you mentioned. What does success look like? What's it going to look like? And he goes into talking about not just numbers, but what he calls OST, ongoing spiritual transformation. How many people, not are we just reaching, certainly we're going to count those because those are people, but how many people are being transformed? How many lives are being transformed? And so he goes into that. And he has numbers listed there. We want 30 people to get it by the time of our first previous service. That's going through this transformational. He's doing that with his leaders. 50 people in our life groups by the launch in January 2014 requires 4 to 8 small group leaders. 250 people to launch, and then seeing this number of our faithful attendance in the fall of 14. So what he's saying, that's something I teach these guys. If he launches with 250, and it's through word of mouth, it's through all these people he's gathered, it's through direct mail, it's through other means, chances are the Sunday after he launches, which is in January, if he launches, let's say he makes 250, he'll probably get back maybe 150 to 170, most likely. So then the goal is, if you do this methodology and do a large launch, the goal is a year from now, that you would be running what you actually launched with. Does that make sense? So January in 2015, his goal is that every Sunday we have 250, and then they're growing from there. It's an aggressive goal. It's a great goal, but it's very, very doable. We did that in each one of my, two out of three churches. The other one, I was only there for a year and a half. 30 people come to Christ in the first year. So their goal, they hope to see 30 people accept Christ in their first year as a church. Next slide, Jan, is what's it going to cost? Notice the graphs, nice graphs. Here's our budget. Here's our need. The graphs go with from left to right, and it's what I told you about earlier, where one's phasing out and one's increasing. The church money is increasing. The outside support is phasing out. Next one, how do you get involved? You get involved by praying. You get involved by giving. And here's one you don't usually see. You get involved by referring. referring and joining. So maybe, where do you live?
Red Bluff, California.
Red Bluff, California. So you're Red Bluff, but hey, maybe you have a friend or relative who lives up in the Sacramento area, and he would give you this, and hey, you know, we're not moving up there, but we have a friend who lives up there, and we'll contact them. So referrals that come in that then Drew would follow up on. Current strategic partners at the bottom. These are groups, his home sending church, Richfield Community, Evangelical Free Church of America, that's his denomination, Hessel Church, that's the church that sent his associate pastor, Stamps Foundation, it's a foundation he's familiar with, they're giving him a grant of like $10,000, and then EV Free Fullerton, Swindoll's old church where Mike Erie is now, they're helping support him to the tune of $500 a month. So then the last page is coming soon to El Dorado Hills, the website, the email, and the address. So that is Drew's plan. Let me give you my email. So if you want to get this email, if you want just this, then just put master plan. If you want the master plan plus a digital copy of his first mail out that's at the printer right now, that's going out later this week or next week, just say mail out or direct mail also. If you don't put either, I'm just going to send you the master plan. I figure you just want the master plan. But if you want both, just put both. My email is coach, C-O-A-C-H, Dave, D-A-V-E, Page, not with an I, P-A-G-E, like a book, CoachDavePage@gmail.com. Just send me that. I'll be glad to send you that. Now I want to just open it up for questions and see what kind of questions you have. I do want to show you this. This is my bias. And I'm going to pass one of these around just so you can kind of see what it's like. Okay, this is just one he sent me just in a paper, you know, printed kind of thing, color printer. But if you're going to go to all that trouble, why not, if you're going to put all that time and energy, why not do something like this? It's just a little bit more. Note it, look at this, though. This is Mercy Road. I mean, that's really an excellent thing. I went through an MBA program with Ken Blanchard at Grand Canyon University. Here's a sample thing of what Ken Blanchard, they give these away for free at their office. It's a thing on life skills. It's a creative decision making. So you can do a workshop and you get one of these as part of the workshop, and they give them away free in their office. But the quality, this is the same kind of quality, if not as good, even better than something you see offered in the business world. And so this is what you're going after. So I'm going to pass this around. This is Mercy Road. What's his name, Jan, the pastor there? Josh Huffman. Josh Huffman is the one, not this year, where Todd McGregor won, but the last Nuts and Bolts conference in Florida we did, Josh Huffman won. And it wasn't just the best one. It was, I thought that was the best thing, but he was the real deal, too. And we were unanimous in choosing Josh as the winner of the Nuts and Bolts Conference for the master plan. So that's the master plan. Versus this. This is a really good master plan. This is a church planner in Nebraska. He answers the questions, why does the church exist? Why should we plant new churches? What's the vision for this current project? Content-wise, he does a great job. But which one do you want to read? You know, this one or Drew's? And Drew's looked like this at first. I mean, that's how it looks. But then Drew gave it to a guy at his sending church who does the graphics. And the guy who does the graphics. So that's another note to self, is just get a good graphic person to take your content and put it into something like you saw there. So questions that you have, comments that you have. Jan, we'll see you later. I'll mute it when I'm done. So. Josh Huffman, not Huffman. Josh Huffman, Mercy Road Church. I know it's in Indiana. So you can look him up, and that might even be online, Jan, that master plan. If not, we could send it. We can send him one of those too, the Mercy Road one. If you want the Mercy Road one, send that to it, because I have that one in digital form too. So just say Vintage and Mercy Road. A couple questions. Yeah, you were first. So you're saying if you wrote something negative about the target family? He knows these guys. I think these guys, actually, he used them because he won one of them to Christ, the one he put on there. So he had their permission. So they're putting that on. So no, I wouldn't necessarily share that with... This isn't an evangelism tool for a target family. I know you're not saying that. But this is more for partners, denomination. I mean, I think you can share it with it. It has the timeline. It's like there's certain things you can share with it. But some of those things, like, you know, some things we would say about our community. Boy, they need Christ, and we need to pray for them. And who do you have? Well, we don't share that with people. Yeah, we're praying for you, Joe, you know, because your wife gave us your name, so we're praying for you. So you have to be careful with that. You have to be careful with that. Somebody else, yes. Yeah, it's Coach, COACH, Dave Page, PAGE, @gmail.com. Yeah. Yes?
Did Drew move to Eldora, right?
He did.
Not from there.
So you don't
necessarily have to be part of that culture.
No. He was not part of the culture. He never lived in El Dorado Hills. He actually had lived when he was younger, I think growing up at one point somewhere else, another suburb of Sacramento. So he knew the lay of the land. El Dorado Hills has changed so drastically and grown so drastically over the last decade. It's just one of these up-and-coming cities, great place to plant. He talks about it in there. There's only 5 Protestant churches in the city of El Dorado Hills. El Dorado Hills has a population of about 50,000. Greater Sacramento is the 5th or 6th largest city in California. So it very much is strategic. It's a very high income. Well, Drew came from Orange County, where we live, where this is here, the very, pretty high income around Saddleback here, and where he is in Yorba Linda, very similar kind of community. So he related to that. Now, every place is going to be different, but that's just where he's at, and that's where El Dorado Hills is, yeah.
What kind of facility is he going to launch?
He is meeting out of a middle school. They looked at a building, an existing building. The landlord was going to give him a great deal and actually build it out for him. The problem was it only sat 150 people. And he was all excited. And I said, Drew, no, I wouldn't do it. I think you're going to have a couple hundred on your launch. That means you'd have to do 2 services. Nothing wrong with that. But then when you get 300 or 400, you're going to be running 4 or 5 services. I said, that's crazy. Give yourself options. Don't sign a 3 to 5 year lease on a building that seats, you know, 100 or 200. And so they went into the school. He was trying to avoid the setup breakdown situation and finally said, okay, no, we got to do this. This isn't going to work. God showed me, and they went out and they got the trailer and they got the sound system, and they're doing setup breakdown. They're practicing, and they start in the school in a couple weeks. Yeah. Yeah. Easiest way isn't always the best way. Yeah.
About how he was able to get the other local pastors on board in terms of building those relationships, so it wasn't a scenario where they felt
threatened
by this new church plant coming.
Good question. Good way to do that is through existing relationships. So he called me and I said, here's 3 pastors to talk to. Use my name. It's hard to get the pastor, so you realize that if you are one, especially pastors who pastor large churches. There's a system there to get through. It's usually the secretary who will get through, but it doesn't always have to be the lead guy. One guy, he went to Bayside Church, which is the largest church in Sacramento. Ray Johnson is the pastor there. he would have never got to Ray no matter what he did. So I targeted him through John Valensky, who was the executive pastor. He's one of the associate pastors who started the church with Ray. So he went through Ray, and he got to John. So he said, John, could you and Ray meet with Drew? I sent John an email. So then Drew contacted him. He contacted African-American pastor right in the heart of Sacramento, who I met in my doctor of ministry program. He contacted somebody else. So if you know some people going in and you kind of pave the way for them, then you contact them. It's not just some person out of the blue. It's like, oh, you're a friend of his. Sure, I'd love to talk to you, kind of tell you about the community, what to expect. Oh, and you should meet this other pastor. And so that's kind of how it worked for him. And a great idea, though, because so many times you go into a new community and they're suspect of you. And if you start with 250 people, some of them get jealous of you. And you want to break that down. You want to work with them. And so that's what Drew's doing. A very good strategy that a lot of guys don't do. They don't even think about it. That's very, very good. Any others? All right. Have a great day. Enjoy it. It's going to be beautiful. I'll be up here if you have any other questions. Take care.